Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, June 15th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds the 1978 Indian Child Welfare Act. Idaho County Sheriff's deputies released details of death of Spokane family of four in Salmon River Saturday. Latah County Commissioners award five-year solid waste contract to Sunshine Disposal of Spokane Valley. And federal government will take applications for prosecuting attorney to enforce hate crime laws and civil rights violations in Idaho. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. In a 7-2 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court today upheld the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978, which gives preference to tribal members in adoption and foster care of Native children. Three European-American families and the state of Texas challenged the law by calling into question the legal tenets of tribal sovereignty. Congress passed the Indian Child Welfare Act in 1978 to help address hundreds of years of harm by European-Americans who systematically removed Native children from their families and forced them into lethal boarding schools, and more recently by aggressive adoption agencies and aggressive foster care programs. The boarding schools and other forms of removal were key components in nearly wiping out Native languages and culture in North America. Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote for the majority, "The issues are complicated, but the bottom line is that we reject all of the petitioner's challenges to the statute, some on the merits and others for lack of standing." Three other conservatives on the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and John Roberts, joined with the three liberals on the court, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, in issuing the majority opinion. Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented. The Protect Indian Child Welfare Act campaign issued a statement saying, "We are overcome with joy that the Supreme Court has upheld the Indian Child Welfare Act. The positive impact of today's decision will be felt across generations." Confederated Tribes of the Colville Nation Chair Jared Michael Erickson told the Spokesman Review website after today's decision the tribe was involved in efforts to get Congress to pass the law in 1978. Erickson said since then the Colville tribes have used ICWA to protect the best interests of Colville children and families in states and counties around the country. Current leadership of the Colville tribes was honored to sign on in support of the tribal amicus brief, which was filed in the case decided today. Thankfully, the Supreme Court declined the plaintiff's invitation to turn the clock back 45 years. The U.S. Justice Department is taking applications through Tuesday for an attorney to specialize in prosecuting hate crimes and civil rights violations in Idaho. It's a new role for a member of the group of attorneys that work on behalf of the federal government in Idaho. Idaho's new U.S. Attorney Josh Hurwit and other federal district attorneys around the nation have been working to create the United Against Hate initiative, which includes law enforcement, community leaders, and prosecutors to combat violent hate crimes and other forms of discrimination. The Idaho Capital Sun reports Hurwit said earlier this year, "In my view, this initiative is particularly timely for Idaho as we have experienced a series of troubling hate incidents throughout the state in the past several years." The job description says this new position will protect the civil rights and constitutional rights of all persons in the District of Idaho through criminal prosecution, civil enforcement, and community outreach. The criminal component of this position will involve prosecuting civil rights crimes in federal court, including but not limited to hate crimes and excessive force violations by law enforcement. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Idaho is also taking applications for an attorney to work with its COVID-19 fraud task force to prosecute those who illegally used pandemic assistance program money. A number of elected officials in southwestern Idaho wrote letters of support for Caldwell Police Lieutenant Joseph Hoadley during the sentencing phase of Hoadley's case. Hoadley pled guilty to three federal felonies and is currently serving a three-month sentence in California. The letters impacting the sentencing of Hoadley by U.S. District Court Judge Scott Skovdahl were originally sealed, but Boise television station KTVB filed a motion to intervene to make the letters public. Former Caldwell Police Chief Frank Wyant wrote, "Please consider the impact this is having on him and his son's lives. Joey is a great man, father, and Christian role model to his sons and many others. He is more than this case, more than what the media has tried to make him out to be." Caldwell City Councilmember Chris Allgood wrote, "Joey was tough and professional. He was not abusive, nor was he corrupt. He was asked to do an extremely tough and dangerous job, and he did it exceptionally well. His actions played a large part in the reduction of violent crime and the improvement of public safety in Caldwell." Others who wrote letters to the judge included Canyon County Prosecutor Brian Taylor, Caldwell City Council Member John McGee, and Caldwell Police Department Chief and former Canyon County Sheriff Chris Smith, as well as Caldwell Police Sergeant Scott Krupper. Investigators with the Idaho County Sheriff's Department report the 17-year-old driver of a car with a family of four from Spokane likely fell asleep and drove off U.S. Highway 95 into the Salmon River north of Riggins Saturday. 36-year-old Calvin C.J. Miller, 17-year-old Dakota Miller, 10-year-old Jack Miller, and 8-year-old Delahia Miller died in the accident. The Lewiston Tribune reports Idaho County Deputy Scott Sumter wrote in an accident report, "He arrived on the scene at 12:57 p.m. Saturday and found the partially submerged gold-colored sedan flipped over in 5 to 7 feet of water in the river." Sumter wrote, "At the time, it was unclear if the vehicle in the river was a new crash or previous crash, as there have been several crashes in close proximity to the reported area." Sumter described what emergency responders found. He wrote, "In the driver's seat was Dakota Miller. In the front passenger seat was Calvin Miller. Calvin's seatbelt was secured and he was still seated properly in the front passenger seat. In the rear passenger area on the passenger side was Delahia Miller. Delahia's seatbelt was secured, but it appeared that she was sideways in the seat area with her feet up in the headrest of the front passenger seat. Based on my investigation and after processing the crash scene, it is believed that Dakota Miller was fatigued while driving from Spokane en route to Council and fell asleep while driving in the area of milepost 199 on Highway 95. Due to this, Dakota drove off the highway, striking a large pile of rocks, sending the vehicle airborne. The vehicle struck another large pile of rocks, flipping the vehicle end over end and landing upside down in the Salmon River. In the course of events, the driver's window was broken while the remaining windows stayed intact, causing the extremely cold water to fill the cab of the vehicle with its occupants secured in their seats to be trapped, resulting in the drowning deaths of all four individuals." And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
The potential expansion of a fracked gas pipeline in the Northwest faces growing resistance as a decision from the federal government nears. The Gas Transmission Northwest, or GTN pipeline, moves fracked gas from Canada to California. The Canadian company TC Energy's proposed GTN Express would expand the pipeline dramatically. The company is waiting for approval from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper says attorneys general from California, Oregon, and Washington have sent a letter urging the agency to deny the proposal.
The states are arguing to FERC that, one, there's no demand for GTN Express. Two, GTN Express directly conflicts with the state's greenhouse gas reduction goals. And three, there are negative impacts from this project to communities along the pipeline route.
If approved, he says, the emissions created by the expanded pipeline would be equivalent to adding 754,000 cars to the road every year. Gas Transmission Northwest says the project is necessary to provide a reliable source of fuel to the region. FERC could make a decision on the expansion proposal as soon as July 27th. The pipeline runs across eastern and southeast Washington and through central Oregon. Sears says FERC has been talking about environmental justice and listening to communities when they raise concerns about energy projects. He says they have an opportunity with this proposal to follow through on that promise.
It's incumbent on the Biden administration to walk the talk, to actually follow through and translate what they're saying about environmental justice and the voices of communities into their decision making.
Sears notes Washington Utility and Transportation Commission members were skeptical of the necessity of the project at a meeting in early June. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
KRFP Community Radio is proudly supported by Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006.
Fire crews have been working for the last 2 days to control 4 wildfires currently burning in eastern Washington. 3 of the fires were burning in Benton County. Washington Fire Marshal's Office Deputy Public Information Officer Gregory Baruso said those fires are the 6,000-acre Hanson Road fire near Finley, which was 25% contained as of last night, and threatening 150 structures. The 1,000-acre Hoover Road fire, also near Finley, which was 50% contained and threatening 15 structures, and the 150-acre Ruppert Road fire near West Richland, which was 25% contained and threatening 150 structures. Baruso also said the Hat Rock fire near Touchake in Walla Walla County was 50% contained and threatening 125 structures. That fire had burned 1,500 acres in Washington and up to 15,000 acres in Oregon as of yesterday morning. Kootenai County Public Defender Ann Taylor said in a new court document filing this week, her client, accused quadruple murderer Brian Koberger, will contest the grand jury murder indictment against him. Taylor asked John Judge to stay the proceedings until the grand jury record is argued and prepared. The grand jury indictment led to Koberger's May 22nd arraignment, in which the judge entered a not guilty plea on Koberger's behalf when the defendant remained silent and did not enter the plea when judge requested one. The Daily News reports Koberger's lawyers asked the court for all grand jury materials and records pertaining to the indictment. The judge has scheduled a hearing on the request for Tuesday, June 27th. Taylor said she is requesting the stay so there is appropriate relief while the matter of the grand jury record is argued and prepared. Taylor wrote of Koberger, quote, "He is exercising due diligence to discover the grounds upon which to file a motion to dismiss related to how the grand jury was selected." Koberger is under indictment for the murders of 4 University of Idaho students in an off-campus house November 13th. Jailers are holding the former Washington State University criminal justice doctoral student in Latah County Jail awaiting trial. The trial is set to begin October 2nd and is scheduled to run until November 12th. Latah County Commissioners have awarded Sunshine Disposal of Spokane Valley a 5-year contract to handle solid waste collection for the county. Sunshine Disposal will replace Inland North Waste, who has been handling waste collection until now. In a news release, County Commissioners said the decision to move away from its longtime solid waste partner was not easy. They wrote Sunshine received glowing recommendations for its work in the city of Lewiston, Kootenai County, and similar-sized counties in eastern Washington. When Sunshine assumes curbside collections on October 1st, 2023, it will provide Latah County customers with a fully staffed phone line to direct any inquiries and will be able to provide more resources, including trucks, personnel, and containers. In a statement, Inland Northwest said of the county's decision to say that we are crushed by the news today of losing the service contract in Latah County, the area we call home and have served for more than half a century, is an understatement. At every turn, we have done what we thought is in the best interest of our customers, our community, and our environment, despite financial hardship and industry-wide turmoil. In the Northwest will continue service to the city of Moscow and Nez Perce County. According to the Daily News, Inland Northwest says it has no plans to change transfer station operations or solid waste processing at this time. Researchers at the Lost Apple Project of the Whitman County Historical Society have announced the discovery of a variety of apple near Moscow, which was thought to be lost or extinct. A news release from the Lost Apple Project says they have rediscovered Gamble Gold apples in an orchard. They wrote they believe Daniel Gamble planted the orchard when he established a 160-acre homestead in 1880. According to United States Department of Agriculture research geneticist Rebecca McGee, the apple has a golden color with a sweet, tart taste, which is ready to pick in mid-October. McKee said researchers completed genotyping and phenotyping of the apple tree last year. The Lost Apple Project has named the apple Gamble Gold. Washington State University horticulture professor Cameron P. Peace told the Daily News, the newly rediscovered apple is related to the Golden Russet and Grimes Golden varieties. Peace said his department researchers worked with the Lost Apple Project to compile a data set of over 3,000 types of apples. They have combined efforts to identify and confirm if an apple is a lost variety. McGee said they are working with the Lost Apple Project to preserve rare apple varieties and are growing them at WSU's Spillman Farm, where there's enough ground for several hundred trees. She said researchers are growing grafts of 31 lost varieties. McGee also said the Lost Apple Project has identified another apple, which was also thought to be lost. McGee said they have named that apple the Polybemis apple, which someone discovered at the Polybemis Ranch on the Upper Salmon River, 44 miles east of Riggins. She said the apple has a red color and a sweet, tart taste. McGee said there is a growing interest among the public to find lost apples. McGee said people are purchasing old homesteads that have old apple trees. Descendants of former homesteaders have been reaching out to the Lost Apple Project when an apple tree is found, and they are unsure about the type of apple. She said the project is raising awareness of these hidden gems in the backyards of old homesteads, which she says connects people and the places they live with their ancestors. McGee said it really can ground us in the history of this region. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there will be widespread haze tonight and tomorrow, otherwise mostly clear tonight, low 46, increasing clouds tomorrow, high 78, widespread haze before 3 a.m. Friday night, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 53, partly sunny Saturday, high 74, 20% chance of shower Saturday night, mostly cloudy, low 46, west winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25, and mostly sunny and breezy on Sunday, high 64, currently 67. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can adopt a DJ there. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. There's also a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, Talk Nation Radio, coming up next, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, and at 7:30, music with bands that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area. A half-hour show is called Appearing Locally. At 8 o'clock, Maximum Rock and Roll, and at 9 o'clock, the Academy is in with Not Dark Yet. And also recordings of live jam band concerts, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. with The Ride. So stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
Do you usually pick up hitchhikers? Is that a normal thing for either of you?
I wouldn't say it's normal, but we've done it like maybe a handful of times in the past couple years.
It's led by a flag brigade, and behind them is all of the dancers, who step in different styles as the long line slowly wraps around the inner arena. This is Phil Corbett. I make a podcast called The Wind.
I make it outside. I make it at a desk out in the woods.
Out in the mountains, outside Reno, Nevada.
So I do all of the recording out there. I do a lot of the writing and research out there.
Though in retrospect, a sign of things to come, this was a good time for us coyotes. No longer harassed by the wolf, we were free to roam the prairies and the deserts, shouting and yipping to our heart's content. Until the invisible death began to fall upon us, too.
You know, sitting outside and there's birds around you, it changes the, like, my frame of mind while I make it.
KRFP presents The Wind Live in Moscow. Saturday, June 17th at 7 p.m. at Wild at Art. Thank you for playing. You have won the only prize fit for a coyote, a chicken. That's 118 East 3rd Street, and I'll be joined by Corey Oglesby. See you there.